Hi, everyone. It's Deb. Welcome to the Starving for God BBA workshop that is dedicated to getting free from our food and our body image issues. And I'd like to find out who else has made it on the call today. So I'm going to introduce myself, and then if you want to just star 6 to unmute yourself to introduce yourself, and then go ahead and star 6 yourself again to take yourself back into mute. So, again, my name is Debbie. I'm out in San Diego. Oh, yeah, and please say where you're from. I'm a compulsive eater and restrictor and body obsessor and drug addict and chaos creator and Al-Anon. Who else do we have?
Hi, I'm Deb. I'm not Deb. I'm Jack. Jack from Oakland. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm Al-Anon. Drug addict, codependent.
Welcome.
Katie, buddy. Katie from Boston, alcoholic, food addict.
Hi, Katie.
Martin with Amy.
Amy, sorry, we got Amy.
Hi, my name is Amy. I'm a food addict, alcoholic, and drug addict from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Awesome.
Yes, Lorraine from Alberta. I don't know if I'm muted or unmuted right now.
You are. We got you, sister. We got you. We're okay. So glad that you represent Canada. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I'll mute off now again.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Lynn, a drug addict and compulsive overeater from Sherman Oaks, California.
Hi, Lynn.
Cheryl from San Diego, overeater, alcoholic.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
I'm Deb from San Diego. I'm a compulsive overeater and an addict. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Deb.
Hi. Hi.
Anyone else want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Nathan. I'm a compulsive overeater from London, England.
Yay, Nathan. I'm so glad that you got on the line. Did you and Kate end up connecting over there?
No, not yet.
Okay.
She hasn't been in touch. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope the two of you connect. She's works a solid BBA program. Wonderful. Okay, well, we'll get started. I know more people are going to be joining later on, but we will definitely get started. So just to keep the lines nice and free, we will keep you on mute. So if you can make sure that you have star 6 yourself to mute yourself. And I was just reflecting today. I was chatting with one of the folks who's participating in the workshop and was just considering that it's actually really nice to, I mean, in-person meetings are fantastic as well, and it's also just really nice to have this phone meeting. I was thinking that especially with some, you know, as someone who has body image issues and, you know, we'll typically walk into a meeting and it's kind of sizing people up, and that's just, you know, that's just my kind of my judgmentalness that just kind of happened. Let me just mute everybody. And I was just thinking how nice it was that there's none of that when you have a phone meeting. You know, we doesn't matter what you look like, doesn't matter what you do, where you came from, where you're coming from. We're all connected by a common problem and a common solution, and I just really thank you for being here. I thank you for saying yes to your own freedom and to being a part of this growing fellowship, this Starving for God growing fellowship. So welcome. I do have some housekeeping stuff to go over before we get into our prayer and meditation and really dive into the content for today. I'm excited because this is, we're after today, we're finished with looking at the mental obsession. So we will have finished looking at the physical craving, the mental obsession, and then next week we're actually getting into the depths of, but where is this all sprouting from? Where is this coming from? What is the root of all of this? And getting and looking at that spiritual malady. And that's just a great, great place to access the work as well. So first off, want to go over the homework assignment for next week. So again, let me just leave that comment for a second. So the homework assignment from your sponsorship guide is assignment 9. So again, you can access the sponsorship guide. Everyone has access to it. It's on the bbastuff.com website. And just print yourself up a copy. This is how we sponsor in the BBA. This is how we do workshops in the BBA. It's just we all follow this format, and it makes it super, super easy to be a step partner for someone and to help them get free. So assignment 9, again, we're looking at the unmanageability, the spiritual malady, essentially our untreated compulsive eating or restricting. And it's not a lot of pages. You're just looking at pages 44, 45, and 52 that focus specifically on the spiritual malady. So we are in the chapter of We Agnostics, but we are not yet in step 2. It's going to tell you in your Big Book Awakening transcribing section, it's going to tell you to just write smaller or just write in a particular color of pen, because you're going to be going through the same pages in the following week when we go into step 2. So you're going to be writing other things that relate to step 2 on pages 44 throughout the chapter of We Agnostics. So just make sure that maybe you're going to do your spiritual malady transcribing in a blue pen, and then when you get to your step 2 transcribing, you'll do that in a black pen or something like that, just so that it becomes clear for you to distinguish where your notes are coming from. So reference that assignment. Get together with your step partner this week. Again, I know that scheduling things have been coming up for folks, and so you might be in a situation where you need to switch your step partner. Contact me and let me know. Or maybe you're in a situation where you really, 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 even after our whole discussion last time, you really feel like you want to work with a step a sponsor, and just let me know, and I can put a message out to the group if somebody knows someone. Every sponsor that I know is totally full at this point. But again, you don't need to have a sponsor in order to do this work, and just grabbing a step partner and committing to this work is more than enough. What I'm going to do, because there's been, I would say, half of you who are now a part of this call weren't there in the original weeks leading up to this workshop that started on September 28th, and so you might not have gotten my very first Getting Started email that went out that had just all the information that you would need in order to get started with this work. I even have a little video in there. I can't even remember at this point what I said, so it could be totally outmoded for what we're talking about, but I think that there is some value there. And I talk about the format of actually what it looks like to properly do this work to yield the most effective experience, to yield the type of spiritual experience that I've gotten and that I continue to get every time I go deeper and deeper with this work every year doing the steps. And it also just talks about just some suggestions for success. So there's the actual, this is what you need to do, and then there's some notes in there about, this is actually, if you follow these suggestions, you're really, really going to give yourself the most maximum result. And so I suggest that you, or I invite you to read that. I will send that out in addition to my playback email that I'll send out. I'm also going to send that email out. And so just keep an eye out for that after the phone call. I want to just talk about the links and downloading the links, because this has been a point of frustration for a lot of folks, and I want to apologize. So apparently, every time I was selecting, yes, this link should be downloadable, I had to save that function before copying the link. And what I was doing was I was selecting that as an option, and then I was copying the link, but the system wasn't creating a new link that was downloadable. So I have now fixed that. So the email that you will be getting after today's session that has all of the previous calls, it's going to have all of the fixed links. So you should be able to download those links to your computer. Now, I don't have any solution for downloading the link to your phone or playing the link off of your phone, because the link does require a flash player. But what you can do is you can download the link to your computer and open it up in iTunes, which it'll probably default to if most of our computers are default to that as our media player. And then you can simply sync that with your phone. So you can get the recordings onto your phone. I'm not in a position to be able to download this link for everybody. I know I did that once trying to see how I could help out people, because I was getting inundated with emails of people wanting that as a solution. And the only way for me to be able to do that was to download it onto my own computer, upload it to Google Docs, and then try to share it with you all. And now I've shared so much stuff from Google Docs that Google Docs has actually cut off my ability to share mass list like that. And I just, with 100 people on our list, I can't share individually. So I'm just asking you to take that onus upon yourself and download. If you have any further questions about what the heck I'm talking about, feel free to email me after the meeting. I do want to leave some time for people to share in the discussion time. I know we like to keep the topic really focused on the topic of the week. And just because I've been speaking with a number of you this week and been reading emails and just been getting feedback, I know that a big theme that's been coming up for a lot of you is lack of self-acceptance. If you are someone who's on the call today and you've had an experience with that, and you also have some hope to share about that, I would love for you to share your experience around that. Earlier this year, I really had a very, very specific experience around God taking me to a different place, like truly not knowing what freedom looked like. At the beginning of this year, in so much body loathing and self-hatred and just disgust with myself. And I actually had a friend who said to me, "Deb, have you even considered what freedom from your body image issues even looks like or feels like?" I couldn't even conceive of that. You know, there's the 9-step promises that we get, and it says you'll know a new freedom and a new happiness. And yet, how much time was I actually spending in quiet time considering, what does that mean for me? What does freedom mean for me? I know that every week I send you these emails that say, "Hey, food to freedom friends," but what does freedom actually mean in my life? And what does that image of myself? And my friend said, like, the moment she asked that question, she kind of saw my little, you know, my thought bubbles kind of going. And she said, "Not you 10 pounds thinner or with a tan or in the relationship or having the financial status that you think you need to have. Not any of that. But what does freedom with you, just as you are today, what does that look like?" And I just started to cry. I couldn't even imagine what freedom in my current frame, in my current situation, in my current financial status, in my current relationship status, you know, in my current life status, like, I could not imagine that there was even a possibility for freedom. So freedom for me always felt like something like, oh, when the weight comes off. Oh, when that this happens, when that happens. And so it just, for me, it had to start with God, please help me be willing to even conceive of what freedom might even feel like in my current body and in my current life. And that's where my prayer started. And slowly I was guided to start taking some action. And it was completely through God's grace that I started to slowly experience see myself slightly differently. And I remember at one point, I mean, this was kind of how my, this is some of how my prayers would sometimes be, like, God, please help me get the fuck over myself. Because I was also so sick of my, like, how much I thought of myself and how much I obsessed over myself. Like, that was gross to me, too. So looking in the mirror was gross to me, and then, like, my whole obsession around myself was gross to me. And it was like, oh, my God, I don't have the power to do anything different. And so one of the things I was guided to do, and I want to share this because I was speaking with one of the participants earlier today, and we were speaking about this, and she had heard this elsewhere, and I feel like there might be some value to it. So, again, this is not from BBA. An aspect of it that is from BBA is that this feels like the guidance came from my connection with my higher power, and I felt intuitively guided to something. So that part is, I would say, falls under the BBA way of living, of being in pages 84 to 88 from the big book and actually living and practicing what it has to say, following those instructions. But what I'm about to share isn't, this is just my own personal experience, that I was guided to just for 5 minutes every day do some kind of movement. And at the time, it was guidance to do just like a little bit of walking or even a little bit of jogging, just for 5 minutes. It wasn't even about burning calories. It was about moving energy. And I saw it as that. And so when I would go out into the neighborhood and I would start to walk, or I would start to even like jog really, really slowly, I almost imagine like, oh God, God, just literally like shake it out of me, like shake everything I think I know out of me, you know, open me up for a new experience. And moving energy like that was really, really powerful combined with my daily prayer and meditation. So I just wanted to share that. Just be open for how you're guided. The other thing I would just want to say, I just want to plug the prayer and meditation a little bit, because I was speaking with someone earlier today who was talking with me about the miracle and the miracles that have come alive for her as a result of doing this work. And she's someone who is in our workshop right now. She hasn't completed the steps through food. She's in it. She is also so willing, and she's doing all the work, and she's doing her daily 84 to 88, and she is having the miracles come alive for her. She is experiencing the faith that comes as a result of relying on God. Even though she's not fully unblocked, even though she's still in the process, it's still working for her. The grace is moving through her, and it brings me back to that original thing I think we were talking about in the first call or the second call, with that acronym of HOW, of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And if I can just keep that humble attitude, I can actually access, I get the grace that I need. If God's going to meet me wherever I am and give me whatever I need to handle whatever is happening in my life right now, whatever situations come up. And so I really, really encourage you to make it a part of your daily and multiple daily practice, that set-aside prayer. Please help me set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth. And for maintaining an attitude of willingness and honesty and open-mindedness, and maybe the way that I did it before, the steps before, the last time, maybe that's not going to be sufficient for me to get a new experience. Because if I want something new, I'm going to have to do something different. And then that plug of reading pages 84 to 88 and actually following what it has to say, doing a daily 10 step, living my daily 10 steps. I just actually did it today. I made an amends to someone who I realized that I had yesterday. I had kind of blown off a little bit, and I just did that, and it helps to keep my channel clear and open. And of course, that daily prayer and meditation, and the morning considerations and the evening considerations. So this program works, and I know we say it all the time: it works if you work it, but it really, really does. So, let me just look at my notes here to see if there's anything else that I want to share about before we get into our prayer and meditation. I just have this one note, and this actually comes from some of the notes that I was making from one of the participants who I was speaking with today. And this, she was saying that she originally just had some judgment around the set-aside prayer. It seemed so simple and basic, and it was like, yeah, that's dumb. And I get it. You know, that's why our Idiot's Guide is called the Idiot's Guide for Really Smart People, because we think we know, and this is actually a part of what we're going to be talking about today, is the part of us that thinks that we know, that self-knowledge is, you know, I know what I need to know, and that's going to work for me. And this miraculous transformation that can happen when I realize that the power is in me admitting that I don't know, and then really seeing that, like, I don't actually have to figure this out. See, I hold on to thinking that I know because I think that I need to have control, because I'm so afraid of lack of control, and I'm so afraid of letting go. And because I have this delusion that somehow, like, me holding on to this, like, little bit of what I think is control is actually working for me. And the image that I get, and I can't remember if I've said this on the call or just in other workshops before, where it's like I want to look into a room, and I'm looking through the little keyhole, and I'm seeing my little limited view of that room, and I'm making some decisions about what's in that room. And then, like, God is the room. God sees all of the room. God sees me looking through the keyhole, and God's like, oh, I can totally help you. And I'm like, no, my viewpoint, I get it, and I'm going to make decisions based on what I'm seeing, what I think I know. And then, you know, we do this work, and, like, God simply just, like, opens the door for us, and we can walk through. I mean, it is kind of funny. And so this person who I was talking with earlier, she said it blew her away. She's like, I don't have to figure this out. And we're going to get to that place at the end of this chapter where I'm really starting to understand, like, oh my gosh, I am going to be able to align myself with a power that's going to solve all my problems. The tiny things that come up in the middle of the day that I don't even think about, that I just find myself defaulting to trying to manage in my own brain, like, even that I can give over to God, and I can actually relax and take it easy. And so this is the freedom that we get in this program. And we literally get God, instead of us feeding our addiction, God is going to actually feed me all of the answers and all of the solutions with how to run my life. Like God's going to be giving me that intuitive guidance, and I don't even have to actually figure it out. Okay. So with all of that said, let's get into some prayer and meditation. And we are on the last day of looking at our mental obsession. So we'll say the set-aside prayer for the mental obsession, and then we'll go into a couple minutes of meditation, and we'll dive into this juicy chapter. So, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my mental obsession before I start to compulsively eat or restrict. Okay, so just to review a little bit, we are still in our step one, not too much longer, probably having a major step one experience at this point, and that's a good thing. We are looking at the mental obsession. So remember, I am powerless over food and how I act around food. Dash, and my life has become unmanageable. We are still before the dash, looking at how I'm powerless mentally and physically. And next week, we're going to start into after the dash, looking at our unmanageability. And so we're still looking at these ideas of loss of control and choice and power. And so I'm looking at my mental obsession that precedes the first bite or the first restriction, the first acting out. I'm looking at what happens to my thinking. And so we first, in There is a Solution, we started to get this image of, it's in the beginning of this chapter, but we got introduced to the concept of control, loss of control, and choice and power. And once I've lost one, I've lost all three. And then we get this illustration of like men who've lost their legs, they never grow new ones. And it's trying to tell me I never regain control. Once I've passed beyond that point, then where I've lost control, then I never actually regain control. Even though I think that I'm regaining control, it's usually inevitably followed by still episodes of still less control. And do I see that in my past? And I can use the word power in the same way. I've lost the power. I've lost power. And I've also lost the power of choice. So all of these things, I actually don't have a choice whether I'm going to or whether I'm not going to act out, even though I think I do. And I've actually lost power to do anything different. There is something that is more powerful that takes over me. And so we're going to be looking at this stuff today. And we're also going to be looking at those three other little terms that we got introduced to in this chapter, the More About chapter, of obsession, illusion, and delusion. And we learned that just with the control, choice, and power, with obsession, illusion, and delusion, I can interchange any one of those words for the other, and it means the same thing. So I have to ask myself, do I have the obsession or the illusion or the delusion, right, the lies that I tell myself, that I can eat the way other people do? Or that maybe after some time period, maybe it's a week, maybe it's a year, maybe it's 10 years, right? Remember Mr. Carpet Slippers? That I'll be able to control my eating? Or do I think I can just, you know, modify and control, because I think I still have the power of control by changing my diet or limiting the number of hours in the day that I eat or doing a weekend workshop or getting some body work or something like that, or just swearing off for good, right? Do I think I can just wake up every day and just choose not to overeat or not to restrict? Like thinking it through. We talked about that last time. Like, how is that working for me? Thinking it through. Or do I have that mental blank spot that doesn't allow me to connect A to B? Or do I think that I'm justified? We talked about that too. On page 37. Do I think that I'm justified by nervousness or anger or worry or depression or jealousy or the like to act out around food? So this is the mental obsession that the book is talking about. It's not just I'm obsessed about my body. It's all of these kinds of, like, this mental gymnastics that we do, where we're kind of creating these little pathways of like, ooh, I think that I think I can actually, you know, we're kind of justifying things to ourselves. We're lying to ourselves. We're believing that we have still some power or some choice in the matter. So this is what I've got to look at. I've got to get really, really clear on. And the book is going to smash any of my middle-of-the-road solutions that are depending on my mind. We're going to be talking more about this, about, like, will self-knowledge fix me? But it's like, if the book is saying that, like, on page 23, if the book is saying my problems center in my mind, then does it really make sense for me to use my mind to try and heal me? Like, I've got a sickened mind right now, and I'm trying to use a sickened mind to get well. Like, that doesn't make sense. So that is a question that I do want us to get into the discussion around. Will self-knowledge and applying all the things that I've learned about myself and my disease fix me? Will self-knowledge fix me? And also, can I see the insanity? So we get this idea of insanity. And can I see that the insanity of my own thinking, that over here behind, you know, behind door number one is my acting out behavior, right? So we have A over here is my acting out behavior, and B over here are the consequences from whatever I do around food. And I somehow can't connect A to B. Like, something takes over that is more powerful, and I can't seem to connect the behavior with the consequences. You know, and And if I do think of the consequences, it's like it's hazy and it feels threadbare. Like it doesn't hold up any weight, and that insane idea always wins out. And I actually, like, I mean, it gives me some of that on page 37 here. It's like I have to ask, because I'm constantly asking myself, do I have a choice to overeat or to overeat/restrict or not? Do I have a choice? Or have I passed beyond the stage where I can choose? And the trip is that sometimes I think that I'm choosing. I plan it out. I weigh up the consequences in my mind, right? But my seeming choice to act out always comes from some trivial excuse, right? So I'm in that second full paragraph on page 37, some trivial excuse that wins out over my sound reasoning, right? And then it says in the next, the last sentence in that paragraph, the next day we'd ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity, how could this have happened again? Like, was I really making a choice to do it or not to do it? And I look back at my history, and, you know, maybe I sometimes chose not to and I didn't. Like, maybe that's true, because that is true for me. And you're probably sitting there at home like, yeah, well, maybe I chose not to and I actually didn't act out. But can I also see in my history that sometimes I chose not to and I did it anyway? And if that is true for me too, then I've actually lost control because I can't stay stopped. I can't just do that experiment that they said, oh, just for an entire year, just wake up every single day and just choose not to. No program, no prayer meditation, no God, no sponsor, no nothing. Just choose not to. Maybe you can white knuckle it for a while. Maybe I can white knuckle it for a while. But I'm not happy, joyous, and free. Oh, hell no. That actually sounds more like my disease. It sounds more like when I go into my restriction mode around not compulsively overeating or trying to eat, you know, to not over. God, it's too much. I can't even. Too much. And then on the other side of it, with knowing all of the attendant suffering and pain and humiliation of acting out, why would I actually choose to do it? So, right? I mean, like, why would I actually choose to do that? So, can I see that I'm not really, really making a choice, but that it's something beyond my mental control? And that's the question I ask myself, and that's the question that I extend to you. And this is stuff that I know the first few times I did this work, I didn't catch all of it. You know, the first time I definitely didn't catch all of it. I was like, it threw so much over my head. When I went through, the second time I went through the work, I took a sponsee through. And when we started engaging in this work together and doing the Idiot's Guide questions again, I realized like how little of it I got the first time around. And it was okay, because guess what? Like, God gave me whatever I needed to stay engaged in the work, to start working with others, and it took me to the next level. It took me to the next layer. It just, you know, and this program continued to blossom, and for me, and I continue to blossom with it. I looked up the word choice, and I love this. A choice is an act of selecting or making a decision when faced with two or more possibilities. And so I have to ask myself that, like, do I actually think I have two or more possibilities? Because by this point in the work, I have to get to a place where I can see that I actually don't have a choice. And if I identify as being the real one, and we already did that, and there is a solution, so if you haven't found your truth, you want to definitely do this work and find your truth, so that by the time you're at this point, you're relating as coming from the place of, I know they're talking about me, I see myself in this work, I'm transcribing and I'm writing my own experience in the margin or above the lines, and I am seeing myself come alive in this. So if you people are telling me, you know, and I'm also seeing where I'm like Jim and where I'm like Fred and where I'm like the jaywalker and where I'm like the Mr. Carpet Slippers. I'm seeing myself in this work. And so when I recognize myself in this work and then you tell me this is not going to work, right, middle of the road solutions, depending on human aid, and this is going to work, spiritual solution, depending on God, I'm going to be listening to you. And so I encourage you to really sit in contemplation with these concepts. God, please help me see the truth about where I'm in delusion. Please help me see the truth about where I'm in obsession. And, you know, where I'm in obsession that it's going to be different this time, or where I'm in obsession that I'm going to beat the game, or where I'm in obsession that if I just follow this new plan or this new diet, it's going to work out for me, you know. And so the book gives me example after example. And what I need to get to by the end of this chapter, and I know that it's in your Idiot's Guide questions, so hopefully you gave yourself a chance to consider this and to answer it. But, you know, people will say, like, oh, I just can't overeat, or I just can't restrict. But it's not that I can't. It's that I will. I will act out again unless something comes between me and that next bite or that next diet. It's not that I can't. It's that I will. And so I need something to come in between me and the inevitable whatever I'm going to do. So let's actually get into the work. So I'm on page 37, and we start at the bottom paragraph because we've already read three-quarters of this page. But your assignment today starts with the Jaywalker story. And I hope that you took the time to transcribe your experience with this, because it is kind of funny, it is kind of absurd, and yet it totally fits. So I'm just going to read it with some of the notes that I have. So it says, our behavior is absurd and incomprehensible with respect to that first bite or skipped meal as that of an individual, as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. So here's the description. He gets a thrill out of, what, skipping a meal or restricting all day and binging at night, or going to the grocery store and buying binge foods, or, you know, fill in the blank. What's your experience here? He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings, in spite of guilt and shame, in spite of judgment, and, you know, in spite of self-loathing. Up to this point, you would label him as foolish and having a queer idea of fun and pleasure. Luck then deserts him, and he skips a meal or overeats several times in quick succession. You'd expect him, if he was normal, to cut it out. Presently, he restricts or overeats again, and this time, what, gets sick, has a breakdown, gains 50 pounds, loses 50 pounds, you know, or just, you know, gains or drops weight severely. What happens? Think about your history. Within a week after leaving treatment, you're acting out again, right? He's acting out again. He tells you he's decided to stop restricting or overeating for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks his promises, and he's back at it again. On through the years, his conduct continues, accompanied by continual promises. And I also wrote in the parentheses, promises not to you over there, but promises to me inside myself. To be careful or to stop altogether. Like, how many times have I made that promise to myself? This will be the last time. Or I'm going to overeat at this meal, and then I'm just going to not eat the rest of the day. Or I'm going to not eat the whole day and just eat that one meal. You know, how many times have I done that stuff? Finally, he can take it no longer, right? This is where just, like, life on the outside. So all this is going on in my internal space, right? And then stuff starts to go wrong on the outside. You know, I I lose the lose my job. I lose my functional abilities. I losing jobs, breakups, bankruptcy, depression, health issues. Right. This is just starts to things. The problems start to pile up. He tries every known means to get the idea out of his head. The overeating or restricting idea out of his head. He shuts himself up in treatment or health spas, hoping to mend his ways. But the day comes out. But the day he comes out, he races to the store to get binge food, or he comes out and just skips meals, whatever that is. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? So you may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who've been through the ringer have to admit if we substituted overeating or restricting for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. So I would love to hear your experience as you relate to the jaywalker and what that looked like for you. However intelligent we may have been in other respects, where food and body image has been involved, we've been strangely insane. There's that word again, strangely insane. Strong language, but isn't it true? So then I love how they know who they're talking to. Some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. So who's sitting there right now thinking, okay, yeah, but it doesn't fully apply? I admit I have some of those symptoms, but I haven't gone to the extremes that you did. Nor am I likely to, for I understand myself so well after what you've told me that such a thing can't happen to me. I haven't lost everything through life. I had this big time. You know, I was going to meetings where I was one of the younger folks in the meeting, and I had so much personal development, self-help, you know, jargon and programming in my brain. And I came into the meetings and I was like, I'm not as bad as you. I'm not ever going to be as bad as you. I have the information now, and I got this. And now I can self-will spiritual growth because I know what I need to do. And so I can just self-will my spiritual program of recovery. And I was still controlling, managing, fixing, my entire life. Like nothing was changing for me on a deep, deep spiritual basis. But on the outside, I was talking the talk and walking the walk. And so is that you right now? Is there still a part of you that thinks, okay, I got this? Or yes, what you say is true, but I actually can control it. And so I don't know if I fully buy into what you're saying. So it's going to address that in a moment here in the next paragraph. So again, we've not lost everything. I've not lost everything through my overeating or restricting, and I certainly don't intend to. Thanks for the information. And then I love this paragraph. That may be true of certain non-real compulsive overeater restrictors who, though eating or obsessing foolishly and heavily at present time, are able to stop or moderate. Remember, back in there is a solution. We have these three different profiles, the moderate eater, the hard eater, and the real compulsive overeater / restrictor. And where am I in that? I need to know my truth. So the people who are able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours are. So that's a different kind of person. But the actual or potential overeater / restrictor, with hardly an exception, will, again, italics, squiggly lines, this is important, be absolutely unable to stop overeating or restricting on the basis of self-knowledge. So we transcribe that into a question. Do I believe I could stay stopped on the basis of self-knowledge alone? That's a question. Consider that. Would love to hear your answers when we get into the sharing portion of today's call.
This is a point we wish to emphasize and re-emphasize. To smash home upon our overeating restricting readers, as it has been revealed to us, out of bitter experience. I feel like sometimes I can hear the tone in their voices when they were writing this. And they're like, we beg of you, we implore you, we wish to emphasize and re-emphasize. You know, it's like kind of gotta feel them. You gotta feel the emotion and what they're trying to share here. So they give us other illustrations, and we meet somebody else named Fred. And so I love Fred. I totally relate to Fred. I feel like I relate to everybody. I love Jim. I love Mr. Carpet Slippers. I love Mr. Jaywalker. But we meet Fred, and Fred is he seems like a really good guy. Fine home, happily married, father of great kids. He's likable. He makes friends with everyone. To all appearances, he is stable and well balanced. And is there a part of me that is that? You know? But he, like me, is a compulsive overeater restrictor, the real deal. So it gives us a little bit of a background of how Fred first encountered program. And it tells us that Fred says a couple lines down here, far from admitting that he was the real compulsive overeater restrictor, he told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. So he would not concede to his innermost self, right? That step one that we talked about last time, he wasn't willing to do that. And then it says a little bit further on that he made up his mind to quit overeating or restricting altogether. And it never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so, in spite of his character and good standing. He wouldn't believe himself a compulsive overeater restrictor of the real kind, much less, and here's where he denies step two, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. Now, this is interesting because I know a lot of us are believers. And a lot of us believe that we already have God. And yet, what we're going to come to find in the next few weeks is that we are holding on to so much prejudice, there's so much that we think we already know that we're actually blocking ourselves from the experience of God in this moment right now and how God can meet us and take us to a completely different place than we ever thought possible, a place of freedom beyond our wildest imagination. And so you hear this guy, Fred, saying he's kind of rejected step one and he rejected step two. So that's where he was. And so I have to ask myself, where have I rejected step one and step two and been a little arrogant, you know? And I can tell you right now, if I don't do the steps every single year, oh, that arrogance will build up in me. That arrogance builds up. Because I'm like, oh, I already know that. I already did that. I did that one time. Or I did that before. I already knew that I was powerless, but I'm not powerless anymore. Ooh, that's dangerous territory for someone like me. So at the top of page 40, he was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. So again, do I have any of those lurking notions that I still have a trick up my sleeve, that there's a new diet plan, there's a new way of eating, there's a new way being in relationship or, you know, bringing something else into my life or, you know, joining the gym or something, and if I could just get my body to be a certain way, I promise I'm not going to be obsessive. I can do this myself. It's a matter of willpower. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge he had acquired, would keep him abstinent the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix him. All right. So be ready to talk on that point at the second half of our call today. So the next paragraph we get, well, he comes back, right? He comes back to program, and it says he was quite shaky. And I've been speaking with some of you recently and getting messages from you, and there's some of us in this group who are quite shaky right now. And that's possibly the most potent place to be right now in your first step. Because maybe I need a new bottom to take this seriously. To really, really see that food and the way I act out around food in my body is my master. And to, like I always say, to pursue this program with the desperation of a drowning person, and what does that mean? And do I need to do something different in my prayer and meditation practice? Do I need to do something different in my step work? Do I need to carve out some one-on-one time to just be in reflection, asking what God's will is for me? Am I making time for my recovery? Am I making time for my program? Am I making time to get to meetings? And am I creating a sacredness around the container of when I'm doing my step work or when I'm meeting with my step partner? These are all really, really important things. And maybe I need to get a little shaky for me to actually get the fire under my ass to take this program seriously, to take my recovery seriously, and to be willing to go to any length. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to be shaky right now. I think it's a blessing. So a sentence or two down in the same chat, in the same paragraph. So here was a guy who was absolutely convinced that he had to stop. He had no excuse for overeating or restricting. You know, because I have this mind that that thinks that it knows when I'm going to act out, like what the circumstance might be. Oh, it's going to be when I have a really shitty day. It's going to be when, you know, when I lose the relationship or when my boss yells at me or when I don't get that raise or when I just feel overwhelmed and, you know, I'm tapped and my resources are tapped or when the kids are sick and, you know, I'm fighting with the husband or whatever that thing is. I always think that I know what the scenario is going to be. And that's not my experience. My experience is that it just happens. So here we get this this case study of this guy. He says, so he had no excuse. He exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all his other concerns, and yet was flat on his back nonetheless. So he shares his experience. And he says, okay, I was really impressed with what you had to say. Hey, Deb, I was really impressed with what you had to say about compulsive overeating and restricting. And I frankly didn't believe it was possible for me to act out again because I really felt like I understood what you were talking about. And I appreciated your ideas about the unsettled insanity which precedes the first bite or the first skipped meal. And I was confident it wouldn't happen to me after what I had learned. A lot of really good information here. And so he goes on, I've been unusually successful in licking my other personal problems, that I would therefore be successful where you men had failed. So he felt he had every right to be self-confident. Where do I feel like I have every right to be self-confident? And that it's only a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping myself on guard. So I, again, because I know that I can interchange the word will, or sorry, the word power with the word control and the word choice, I can read that sentence as it's only a matter of me exercising my control or of me exercising my ability to choose. I'm just going to choose differently. I'm going to wake up every day and just choose differently. Or just exercising my power. I have power. I can control this. In this frame of mind, he goes about his business. And for a time, all was well. Sometimes that happens to me too. Sometimes for a time, all is well. And I have no trouble refusing overeating or over-restricting. I have no trouble. And I begin to wonder if I've not been making too hard work of a simple matter. This is so me. I do this. So he shares, one day, he goes out of town. Nothing new about that. He'd done that before on this particular, you know, dry spell. Physically, he felt fine. There was no problems or worries. Business came off well. Everything was good. Not a cloud on the horizon. And I always put just like a dot, dot, dot. Dun, dun, dun. Right? My mind was not anticipating a relapse. And here we go. I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed, I love this word, as I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to my mind that it would be nice, and you can go in either two different directions or multiple directions, whatever your experience is. It would be nice to actually skip this meal, or it would be nice to have dessert. That was all, nothing more. So I skipped my meal, or I ordered a dessert with my meal, and then let's go with the dessert one. And then I ordered another dessert. After dinner, I decided to go exercise. That's something that I would do. Oh, I need to go burn this off. I need to go exercise. And when I returned to the hotel, it struck me, a little more dessert would actually be better. It would actually be good. I'd be fine before going to bed. So I then, remember having several more that night, plenty the next morning, a shadowy recollection of being in transit again, you know, spending the next few days overeating or restricting, kind of being in that, like, that stupor of just being in it, knowing little of where I went, what I did or said, and then came the reality, the unbearable mental and physical suffering. So do I relate to that? Have I had that experience happen? Where have I been like Fred in my past? Where it just starts with something that sounds so innocent, like, oh, I'm just going to have, I mean, so this actually happened. Let me just check my notes really quick because I don't want to get too far off topic. Hold on a second. Yeah, no, this is perfect. Okay. So this actually happened to me recently. You know, I keep on referencing this, like, this nut butter thing, because it is. It's funny to me, and I love that I have, like, my personal illustration of how this is playing out. Like, that's, you know, that's what I love about this program, is that I can always find where this is landing for me in my life, even with all of the recovery and the freedom that I've gotten. I can always find where I'm in my first step experience all the time. So I've been, you know, I keep on thinking that it's going to be different, right? With eating seed butters. And that I'll be able to handle my seed butter like a lady, you know, or like just have a serving of it. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes I can just have a serving of it. But a day and a time always comes, and I always end up at one point or another going back to overeating it. And it just happened last night. And I look back at yesterday as I was taking my inventory, you know, and like my nightly review. And, you know, it's just so great because this is so me, right? So here I am. I have tons of self-knowledge. I have lots of past experiences with this work. I have lots of past just experiences from, you know, from being in my disease. And yesterday, I didn't do my prayer and meditation when I woke up in the morning. And it was fun. I look back. I'm like, gosh, this is how quickly arrogance and pride and resting on my laurels sneaks up at me. So I felt justified because of all the, you know, air quotes here, all the great work that I do. And it was my birthday on Friday. So I, you know, and I was really, quote unquote, good on Thanksgiving. And my clothes are fitting better. And, you know, all of that, I thought this, all these reasons why. So I didn't do my prayer and meditation. I woke up in the morning. I didn't also just didn't wake up in my own bed. And so I'm like, oh, it's, you know, it was okay. I kind of moved on. I was having a great day. And my eating was a reflection of my spiritual, place that day. Because my eating was not in alignment with God. I waited too long between meals, and then I overate at two of the meals, one of which was just a meal of seed butter. It was like I ate at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, way more than I needed to, and then got out of a movie at 12:45 in the morning and hadn't eaten anything and had a little bit of seed butter in my car. I thought, oh, I'm just going to have a little spoonful just to tie me over. I don't want to eat too much before I go to bed. And I finished the rest of what was in the jar. It's like, I'm so, so clear that this book is talking about me. And yes, we can be cured for good and all. I mean, sorry, not we can be treated for good and all, but it's contingent on the daily maintenance of my spiritual practice. So it's, I don't believe that we are, you know, it's kind of, we talk about this one day at a time. That's not what the book was. The book said for good and all, but I also believe that I can be recovered in mind and body, but I'm always recovering spiritually. And if I let up on my spiritual program, then it's going to tip off that mental blank spot for me, like, oh, maybe this time it'll be different. I had such a great day. I've been doing so well. My clothes are fitting well. You know, I'm like not a cloud, literally not a cloud in the sky. I've been having the best weekend. Surely just a little spoonful would be fine. And then there I go. I'm off and running. Once that first bite goes in, I have no control over if it's going to be one bite that time or if it's going to be the rest of the jar. And last night, it was the rest of the jar. And I'd love to say that that wasn't my finest. That wasn't my best thinking. That was my finest thinking. But, like, the trip is, that actually was my finest. That is my best thinking. That's how I behave when I'm not running on God. So where is this showing up for you? Let's get honest. I want to hear your honest experiences. I want to read a little bit more from the book. So where are we here? Yeah, so I'll read the bottom. I'll read the bottom paragraph here on page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off my guard, I had made no fight whatsoever against that first compulsive bite. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to eat or restrict as carelessly as though, what? As though, for me, as though my seed butter was a lettuce leaf. I don't know. I now remembered what my compulsive overeating and restricting friends had told me, how they prophesied, I don't know how to pronounce that word today, that if I had a compulsive overeating, restricting mind, the time and the place would come and I would act out again. There we have that statement. It came up in your questions. I want to hear about that. I want to hear about your experience with that. They had said that though I did raise a fight, it would one day give before some trivial reason for having a compulsive bite. And that is so my truth. Is that your truth? You can look back and it's like, when it really boils down to it, even if it felt justified at the time, it's a trivial reason. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I learned of compulsive overeating and restricting did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had the compulsive overeating, restricting mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots, right? Cannot connect A to B, can't connect the behavior with the consequences with sufficient force every time. A day and a time will come and I can't make that connection. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then, and it was a crushing blow. That's where I need to get. So if I'm just at the place where I'm at self-pity, but I haven't crossed into the depths of the desperateness to do what it takes to fully give myself to this program, then I simply don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it because I don't think that you're hurting enough. Because I know when I've been there, I haven't been hurting enough. And so if I'm hurting enough, I'm going to make that switch and I'm going to become desperate for the solution. And it's going to translate into the action that I'm willing to take, the time that I'm willing to make for my recovery, for this program, for this actual workshop, for my step work, for my step partner. I'm going to carve out the sacredness of the ritual of doing my recovery program the same way that I carved out the sacredness of the ritual of whatever I did with food or with restricting around food. So a little bit further down on the page 42, so he starts talking about how he then reconnects with the program people. They're piling on heaps of evidence that are showing, essentially just backing up exactly what he was saying, showing other examples from their own experience and from, you know, like from their own group, like of how this very, very phenomenon, this mental obsession, this mental blank spot. And then they outline the spiritual answer and the program of action. And so that is what this book is doing. It's saying, okay, first identify, are you the real one? Find your truth. Next, lay your experience alongside these other case studies and illustrations that we have in the book. Do you see yourself here? Yes. Awesome. This is what every single one of those people did to get free. So if you relate to how they thought, how they felt, and how they behaved, then this spiritual solution is going to work for you too. They outline the spiritual answer and the program of action, which hundreds of them had followed successfully. And here it is. Though I'd only been a nominal church person, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow, but the program of action, though entirely sensible, was what? Was pretty drastic. What does that mean in my life? Like, drastic. Am I treating my program right now like I need to make some drastic changes in my life? And I know I just said it a few moments ago, so I don't want to harp on that, but they go on to say in this paragraph, it meant that I'd have to throw out several lifelong conceptions out the window. So I need to consider, what are my lifelong conceptions? And that's a great meditation, that's a great consideration. What's my current operating platform? Not what was my current operating platform back the first time I got into program, but what am I dealing with right now? Is there a part of me that still feels like I have to do life myself. I have to figure things out myself. I've got to figure out my business decisions myself. I've got to figure out my relationship decisions, my parenting decisions, my money decisions. You know, I've got to figure out how to create an email, what to say, how to have a conversation with someone, how to tell a friend that I can't come to their party. Like, do I still default to thinking that I have to do everything on my own? That I have to manage and control my life, that I need to be a certain way towards you so that you don't act like a bear towards me, or that you don't feel upset, or you don't feel rejected, or you don't feel disappointed. So I try to manipulate the situation by being a certain way, by trying to manipulate you. Is this the kind of stuff that I'm doing? Do I believe that there isn't actually enough for me? Or maybe there's not enough to go around in general. Am I subscribing to the idea of scarcity and lack, so that I need to make sure that I do what I can to get what I need, because otherwise I'm not going to get what I need. You know, am I suffering with that lifelong conception? So I have a lifelong conception that I'm just not enough, or that I'm too much. I actually recorded for you all. I recorded a voice memo yesterday, and I didn't send it. And I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to send it yesterday, but I will send it to you. Don't be confused, because in the call I say, I'll chat with you tomorrow, because I sent it yesterday, because I recorded it yesterday. But I will send it, because it actually dives in more into that too much, not enough dilemma. You know, so I have to consider what my lifelong conceptions are, and it tells me that I'm going to have to throw these away, and that's not easy. But this is what he does. The moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, the moment he committed, so what is he saying there? He's essentially saying that he did the set-aside. He was willing to be honest and open-minded and just willing. Made up his mind to be willing. I had the curious feeling that my compulsive eating restricting condition was relieved. as in fact it proved to be. So we get some grace just from doing what I was talking about at the beginning of this call, just from being willing and open-minded and honest, from setting aside what we think we know. We already start to experience some of the miracles of this program. By reading 84 to 88, doing what it has to say, yes, that is going to continue to grow and blossom and evolve. And by the time you get to step 10 and 11, you're actually going to be like, oh my gosh, I relate to this. I reached a place of neutrality. But it doesn't mean that from now until then, you're fucked. That's not what it means at all. You have access to what you have access to right now, which is the willingness and the honesty and the open-mindedness to say, okay, I'm here, I'm showing up, I'm setting aside what I think I know. And that's what this person did. And already they felt their condition relieved. And I just spoke with one of the participants earlier today who said the exact same thing. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles, this is like highlight this, underline this, spiritual principles would solve all of my problems. All of my problems. Spiritual principles will solve all my problems. And I do a lot of people, I do a lot of work with people who have physical chronic pain, and I teach a method that helps them eliminate chronic pain and get rid of stuck stress. And I know from my own experience with my own chronic pain in my body that it's a spiritual thing. There is a physical manifestation of it, and we can address it from that angle. But if we're not addressing the spiritual side of it, I watch people come in and out of my room, and they don't get rid of the pain. So it solves all the problems. So he says, I've since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and I hope more useful than the life I had lived before. My old manner of life is by no means a bad one, but I would not exchange its best moments for the worst I have now. And here's a fascinating thing that he's about to say. I would not go back to it even if I could. What does he mean by that? Even if I could. He can't even go back to it. Why? Because he doesn't have a choice. I don't have a choice to use, and I don't have a choice not to use. I don't have a choice. He doesn't even have the ability to go back to it even if he could. It's been removed. God is handling all the problems. So that is so, so important for us to know, for us to look at. So last paragraph here of this chapter, the summary. I love how this book gives us summaries, asks us a lot of questions, tells us to consider stuff, and then it gives us these summaries. Once more, the compulsive overeater restrictor at certain times, not at all times, but at certain times, has no effective mental defense against that first compulsive bite or acting out behavior. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power other than human, right? And so we turn these into questions. I'm going to read this paragraph as the series of transcribed questions. Do I believe at certain times I have no effective mental defense against that first bite or behavior? And do I believe that no human being can provide such a defense? And must my defense come from a higher power other than human? And it has me transcribed at the bottom here. If I don't believe the questions asked in this paragraph, it means I still have some reservations about if I'm really a compulsive overeater or restrictor. And if you're having reservations, contact me. Let's talk about it. And then it also says, if I truly, truly get this, then how can, if I truly get that my defense must come from a higher power that's not human, then how can I make my sponsor or the fellowship my higher power? Is that going to sustain me long term? In my experience, it doesn't. So I'll stop there. I am so excited to open the call up and to hear from you. I will pose one of the questions, and then you can also just answer on something in general. So we just had three questions. So the first one I'll start with is, did you read the Jay Walker story, and if you apply it to your eating career, does it fit exactly? So let's open up the call, star six yourself to share. Again, please keep your share to this topic or to the topic that I mentioned earlier today about how you've had, about your hope, your experience, strength, and hope as it relates to the theme of self-acceptance with who you currently are. Yes. Who wants to share?
This is Katie from Boston. May I share?
Yeah.
Hi, Deb. May I share on that question you asked about the current conception?
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay? Okay. I'll be real quick. I guess I just I had a spiritual experience when you were reading. I especially around the body obsession that I just have not ever wanted to look at. My first relapse was with I had been doing this plan, and then I picked up over diet drinks because I just so wanted to control my body. And what was amazing is as you were reading, I realized over the past month, I have this fear that there's no resources and that it's not going to, and so therefore, like, in order to address this fear, I haven't been turning to God. And in not turning to God in my situation at work with money, I have found myself, trying to figure it out on my own, obsessed about the schedule, obsessed with working overtime, and obsessed with there not being enough, which directly equates to me, like, trying to control my body. So over the last 3 months, I've been, like, going from yoga, which I was practicing for 8 years, I'm like, oh, I need to, like, do more. I need to do this crazy, like, exercise thing, and that's going to change my body. And all along, like, my current conceptions I haven't been willing to, like, give to God that I is, like, my stomach, like, not wanting to, like, let go of this idea that if I can just get my stomach a certain way, like, I'm going to be okay. And so I don't know if I've made any sense, but it was just really, really helpful. And I haven't ever known. I mean, I've been in a program for 9 years. I haven't known and wanted to look at because I so fundamentally, since I was a little girl, believed the lie, if I'm thin, I'll be okay. And that somehow directly equates with what I'm given from the universe, you know, that, like, if I can just get my body a certain way. And the last week I joined another exercise program and went 4 times. And this woman looked at me and was like, you went 4 times, you know, and, like, that doesn't seem insane. And the reason I'm sharing this too is because, just like you had shared, that links directly to my behaviors with the food. Like, if I start eating, you know, getting on the scale again, like, when I've committed to God that I'm not going to, like, I start believing a lie that I'm not good enough, and the next thing I know, like, last night, food looks really good. Thank you, God. I was extended a grace period of not eating last night, but, like, I don't know how long that's going to last. So I just I see those current conceptions of not being enough directly related to my controlling around my body, and I just feel really powerless to stop. I feel free in many ways around my compulsions around food, but my body and my obsession prevents me, and I'm so looking in that keyhole and feeling trapped. So I just appreciate you opening that up.
Thank you for that share, Katie. Thanks very much.
Hi, it's Lynn, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Deb. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for being on the call. So I had trouble writing in the margins with all of the other writing, and I really wanted to look at my experience with the jaywalking story. I've really never done this before, and so what I first did was I pulled out just all the different progressions, skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles and got a thrill. And so And I just kind of outlined what my progression, what it was. And for me, getting in front of the fast-moving vehicles and getting the thrill in spite of friendly warnings was in my more early years, way before program, my teen years, and binging on snack foods and carbs and gaining some weight but still having the power and the control and the choice to get, you know, get the weight off. And it wasn't major, but there were lots of friendly warnings. You know, I would watch how other people could stop or moderate certain foods, and I couldn't. I had this horrible experience when I was 13 years old. I was babysitting for this family, and every Saturday night, the wife would have a dozen Winchell's donuts on the counter for me and the kid. And interestingly enough, she was a compulsive overeater, extremely heavy, and her husband hated that she was heavy. And he eventually came on to me. I babysat for like 4 years, this couple, and there was some real dysfunction around that relationship. But so interesting that I could not stop with one, two, or three donuts. I mean, I mean, total friendly warning. Here's a compulsive eater feeding me the donuts, and I, the husband who I had a crush on, and yet I couldn't stop. And I wanted to impress him at 13 years old and have him want me because, you know, that's just, you know, it was just, I don't know how friendly of a warning that was, but, you know, and then moving on, slightly injured several times in succession. The three times I did Lindora weight loss, you know, first to lose 60 pounds and then gain it back and then do it again and lose 75 pounds and then do it again. So in succession, the last time I went on Lindora, it was because I gained 90 pounds back. And then, you know, I look at the fractured skull and I go, that thinking a man would make me happy and getting married for the wrong reasons, and another experience of gaining 100-plus pounds while married. And then I start another diet to lose the weight and get out of the marriage thinking that would make me happy and proceed to gain the weight again. And now adding cocaine and prescription drugs into the mix. And, you know, and then I go to treatment for the drugs and I get into step work and I start building a relationship with a god. But I can't stop eating. And this continues for 2 or 3 years continuously. Mm-hmm. And I'm promising to be careful and to moderate, yet hating myself because I can't control it. And I'm taking women through the steps, and I'm going through the big book through BBA and feeling like such a fraud. So that's where I hold myself up to ridicule. I mean, I got to a point at 3 years sober where I absolutely wanted to die because I could see myself in the book as you're going through the book now. I just remember taking women through the book in Cocaine Anonymous and going, oh, my God, this is me with food. And then, you know, and then I surrender and I get into OA and I get serious and I become willing and I find a sponsor and I, over 2.5 years, lose 110 pounds and feeling really good, but I race out in front of a fire engine by not being honest. and I relapse, you know. I mean, this is me. I mean, I've never had such a deep experience by just looking at my food and drug and weight history, and I see that my jaywalking isn't just binging or eating sugar, it's also dieting. And that was kind of a revelation for me. So I really appreciated this exercise. So thanks for letting me share.
Oh, wow, Lynn. Thank you so much. Like, and I just want to acknowledge, too, for really giving yourself the space and the time to reflect on these Idiot's Guide questions, because, yes, there were only three of them, and so to really, really allow yourself to say, wait a second, like, where is this me, and give yourself that time. We can all hear, I'm sure I can speak for everybody, but I'll speak for myself. Like, I can just hear how, like, the experience that you're having with this work because of the time that you're willing to put into receiving that and having that. So thank you so much. So I'm going to throw out the next question, and then feel free to also speak into the topic in general or speak on your experience, strength, and hope around gaining self-acceptance with your current body or in your current life. So do you believe you could stay stopped on the basis of self-knowledge, applying all the things that you've learned about yourself and your disease up to this point? Gonna have to get some people to share who don't like sharing.
Okay, it's Jack from Oakland. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Jack.
Hi. So, 38, well, absolutely not. I know now that I have to seek my spiritual process. I will have to learn on a daily basis if I'm going to acquire freedom from this horrific illness. You know, I've gotten bits and pieces of this before because of all the years I've been in OA, and I feel like sometimes I walk this place of grace. But I don't know how to keep it up, so I'm glad I'm doing this program because I hear, you know, things that you're saying through this that I have to really, I have to just get spiritually connected more, you know, minute to minute. And I've never been really willing to do that. I have a lot of fear about it, about how to do it, how to keep it up. And I have a learning disability where I forget things pretty easily, and I just get a little bit stuck and lost. But, you know, I just have the willingness, and that's what it just keeps bringing me back because I know how serious this is. Like what I wrote about in the question 37, I wrote about... Let's see, how does it fit exactly? Close anyway. I think if every time I took a bite of sugar or the next compulsive bite, my leg would break or I got a bloody nose or it set me to gain 100 pounds seems to be all the same thing, as I can see how my behaviors and my addiction completely fit the definition of insanity, continuing to repeat that same behavior, expecting different results. At this time in my life, I admit, I've broken my skull, and I need help to stop the bleeding and to repair the damage with a spiritual power greater than me. So, thanks, Deb. Thanks a lot. And thanks
wait. Don't jump off
yes.
the phone yet. I got a question for you. So you talked about, because this will be really helpful. Thank you so much for your share. It's awesome. So you talked about having fear. You said you have a lot of fear about it. You have a lot of fear about what?
Well, I'm somebody who you can tell me how to do something, but if I need to see it done, and so I have fear about not knowing exactly how to do it. I need to see it done. Like I can fix anything. I'm a really good fixer, but if you tell me to sit down at a computer and do this and do that, if I don't see it done, or if you know, if I just need to see it done, and I don't see it for very many people, how they do it. And when they do it, or what I can see, you know, I can always hear when somebody's grounded spiritually. I just have an eye for it and ear for it because I've been in so many programs for so long. And I know when I'm not, I know that I have all the willingness, but I have to see it done. And that's the fear that I get into, is that I don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. Someone, you know, lead me the way or tell me, you know, minute by minute how to get it done. And hopefully I've got the willingness to do that.
Well, I love that you just, I just love that you said that because, so I just want to make this call, because I thank you so much for letting me play with you a little bit here, because it's
sure.
Like, so, like, a lifelong conception that you have is that I have to see it done, right? I have to see it done by, maybe by somebody else. And that seems like it's a lifelong conception. And, but what I also hear you saying, what is so, which you might need to throw away, and you might need to, but I also hear you saying, I don't know, which is exactly where we're trying to get to. We're trying to get to the place of,
right.
I don't know, and perhaps it's not that I need to throw out the whole conception that I need to see it done, but that I get to take that desire and say, God, please show me. Please guide me.
Okay,
I don't know. Yeah, like the I don't know-ness is exactly where we want to get to, because the knowing of this is what, you know, I this is what I know from program, which you also said at the beginning of your share. Like, is it possible that all that stuff is actually what's holding you back from, God, show me in this moment right now? And so that place of I don't know-ness is beautiful. It's like that's what we want to get to. And that instead of seeing that as a deficit, seeing that as a grace.
Makes me cry. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for your share. Yeah. So I'm going to read the last question. And again, I would love to hear from you of anything that we just talked about, even if you just, you know, the Crossfire, this is a Crossfire meeting, as you just heard me kind of going back and forth with Jack. You can comment on another person's share. So you're allowed to do that. We're not here to give advice, but we're allowed to comment and to engage. So the last question, is it obvious to you that without spiritual help, the time and the place will come and you will compulsively overeat, binge, purge, restrict, or overexercise, no matter how much you want to stay abstinent today? So you can share on that, or you can just share in general about where you're at with the mental obsession, how you're relating to this work.
Hi, Deb, it's Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne.
So I'll read what I wrote for 39, and that is, I have to be constantly reminded of living a spiritual life. My compulsivity comes from my mind, my spiritual malady. It reminds me to go back to the triangle. I have to keep connected with people through meetings and phone calls and email. I don't text. I have to continually be on top of step work. And what I mean by that is I have to really, really be conscientious with steps 10 and step 11.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to really be mindful. That's like really, really the bottom line for me. I have to work with others on step work too. And when my triangle is compromised, it's the beginning of my ego taking over. For me, it's when my head starts going negative. And that, to me, is like crystal clear. When I start going down, if I, well, number one, it's also because on some level I'm alienated. That alienation can be from other people. And it can also be if I'm in a group of people where I don't feel connected with them. And if I'm hurting in some, if something catches me by surprise, that can also be a really, really dangerous place for me. So those dangerous places are things that I had to really that I have to watch for, and that for me, and being able to be humble with other people, and not being afraid that if I say something to somebody else, that either they're gonna come back and give me advice or something to that effect. I have to be able to be, I had to search out and make a community within this community of people who would tell me to go to the book or go to God in some form or another, but not tell me what to do unless I specifically was asking for it, was asking for information. So that's what's made me able to get out whatever I need to get out without having to, and to be able to take new risks, because that's really what the program has been about for me. It's taking those new risks, which are also, it's like I'm taking these new risks with God, that I'm being a little more courageous in some way, shape, or form that is different than something that I've done before. And sometimes it's being courageous in sitting with emotions that are really uncomfortable for me. I had to do that today. I had something happen that I didn't, that was just very, very disappointing. And I, you know, I use my step work. And what happened is that it doesn't happen in 5 minutes for me. And that was a big thing that I had to see too, is that I had to learn patience, and that I think for me really kind of comes in the next in step two. But in step one, it was being on the ground and feeling so defeated that and hearing hope and hearing strength in the program and believing that if something was working for someone else on some level, I basically just had that mustard seed of hope that maybe if it worked for them, possibly it could work for me. But it was really as being pushed from that point of being so far on the ground that pushed me through the steps and help and has taken me to a place where I don't go out with my food anymore. But it's because I watch my mind so closely. And that has definitely taken a lot of practice.
Thank you so much for your share.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I'm curious. Because the way that I speak about it sometimes is holding the hopelessness and the hope in the same container, like that I'm always staying very close to the acknowledgement of, the desperation of how much I need this program and how much I need God, and then also in full acknowledgement and awe of the grace and the freedom that has already been given me. Do you, as it relates to this question number 39, do you hold to that? Like, I know that even with the time that I have and the freedom that I've received, do you also see it as I know that I will act out if I don't maintain my spiritual program? Do you live that way?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But what happens for me is like what happened today when I was walking through feelings that were really uncomfortable. And I worked with steps, primarily with step 11, and within 3 hours, it switched. And that switch, to me, is I was able to see God. And I also had an insight on really what the issue was. Because the other thing that I was told early on in the program is that the issue is really never the issue. and that is Mary Jo Kay, who's passed away, she was the one who told me that. And that is having those insights is what shows me the miracles. And it's what takes me to doing that further step work and to keep my mind focused on mindfulness, being more mindful with how I'm thinking. Then it's like it takes away, since I know that I see my higher power working for me in that way, I'm much more willing, almost naturally willing, to go there instead of going backwards and instead of even thinking about food.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been like this big turnaround for me that pushes me towards doing those latter steps at the end of in steps 10, 11, and 12 versus going back to thinking and lying to myself. And also knowing that, I was graced. I was absolutely graced with making that connection that the things that bother me with people, with relationships, all those bedevilments, the dots were connected there that my compulsive overeating was causing me all this turmoil and all this sadness and all this grief, and I just didn't want that anymore. I couldn't get my dreams. My dreams weren't coming true, and that it bothered me to to no end. And I wanted success. I really, really wanted that. And I think everybody really does. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. If we didn't feel good about ourselves, or have even that a little tiny bit of self-esteem, I don't think we would be trying so hard to get abstinent. Mm. We would be okay with destroying ourselves.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your share. Really, really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Do we have any burning desires to share before we bring the call to a close today? Okay, then we will finish with the Serenity Prayer. So if you'd like to join me, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you to everybody who joined today and who's going to be listening in later. Oh, did we have someone who wants to share? And I'm so grateful to be here with you every single week and look forward to our call next week. Email me if you have any questions about getting started with the work, and I'll speak with you next time. Okay, bye-bye.